Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Start it up. What is Thursday?
That's right, buddy.
Start it up for Thursday, baby. Let's go. The fake Friday. No longer a hump day on the other side of the hump. What is up, everybody? Welcome to the DNVR Nuggets podcast. Presented as always. Top rate sportsbook app. Look at that graphic right there. That's made beautiful. By super producer Kale. The beauty, it is a very good job by Kale, but I will say the beauty really comes from Serbia itself.
I can't wait to see it with my own two human eyes, Adam.
8 days away, as it says right there. 7 days, we hop on a plane, and we will be traveling for a full day. One full day will be us traveling. Do you have a travel plan here?
I do.
What's your strategy?
I do. That's
this Boya asked us, by the way.
You want to get into it now?
Yeah, we'll just get right into it.
I bring a lot. I get good hanging in on planes. I really do.
You get good what?
Hanging in.
What's that? I hang out.
I bring movies. I bring shows.
You need to sleep on this plane. I'm telling you right now.
I bring books. I'll probably bring two books, download a couple movies, download some Better Call Saul.
What movies are you going for? Like plane crash movies?
Yeah.
Air Force One?
Yeah, that's it. No, I don't know yet, but I'll read two books. I'll play.
Can I make a list of Crusader plane crash Kings movies 3. For you?
I'll watch Con Air.
Con Air's a great movie.
It's a great movie.
What did you think of Aaron Rodgers showing up to camp wearing?
He is cosplaying as a method actor preparing to play Aaron Rodgers.
He's at the Fielder method, would you say? The Fielder school of acting?
He doesn't know anymore.
I love it, man. Can I tell you something? Yeah. I love it. I'm all in. When he showed up as Poe from Con Air, I'm like, perfect. Absolutely perfect. 10 out of 10. Totally redeemed himself in my eyes. I'm easy. I'm an easy sell.
I wonder what teammates think of him. Who cares? He's good. Right? He's good.
All quarterbacks are weird, man.
Quarterbacks have
really turned weird.
They are.
Let's ride. If you could dress up, I guess you do already do this. You already cosplay.
Every day. As someone cooler than myself.
And it's Miles Teller from Maverick.
That's right.
Is it Maverick or is it Top Gun Maverick?
Top Gun Maverick.
Top Gun Maverick.
Right.
Yeah.
Rooster.
Is Tom Cruise cool in that movie to you?
In that movie? The second one? Not cool. I mean, he's Tom Cruise. Like, he's when he needs to be in the movie. But that movie is about the youngins to me.
See, Tom Cruise is the only guy who has pulled this off where, like, every franchise from, like, the 80s or whatever, have we talked about this? Every franchise, it's like they hand it off. Mm-hmm. And he's the one that's like, no, I'm still the star.
No, you guys can
all back me up, but I'm 70. I'm still... Like, the plot of the movie is usually like, I'm too old. It's your turn, youngin. And he's like, you guys stay back. I got this.
He just wrote his life.
He was supposed to hand the reins over like 30 years ago.
Oh, 100%.
Interview with a Vampire was him and Brad Pitt. And it was kind of like the new guy. And he came in and was like, I'm going to out-act him in this movie.
We all know that the way we lose Tom Cruise is Mission Impossible 14.
You think so?
Yeah, that's how he's going out.
I don't know. I think he gets it. I think we've all overthought the formula. And he's like, guys, airplanes. Fast cars.
Oh, it worked for me.
Of course it did. It changed your personality.
Yeah, it changed my life.
Anyway, I'm all for Aaron Rodgers. If Jokic showed up as somebody to training camp this year, full costume, who would you want it to be?
I simply cannot see it.
Ivan Drago?
Yeah, sure.
who
Timofey Mozgov in the
Who's most shirts. Likely to show up as a character?
That's a good question.
You know who actually has sneaky good odds on this list, who I would be buying their odds? Aaron Gordon.
Yeah, I agree.
If Aaron Gordon showed up in like a full cosplay of Poe, maybe same thing. Dude, he could pull it off.
He should show up with a silver surfboard.
Nobody likes this.
25 people
like it. Nobody likes it. Well, nobody likes it. Guys, we have a great show for you today. Tony Jones is going to be joining us for a little bit. Enemy number one in Denver over the last couple days.
Good timing, boss.
We actually booked him last week, and I'm excited for it because it gives us another thing. He, of course, you know, a small back and forth with me. I have a lot of people in the mentions trying to include themselves in the conversation, you know, about how he views Michael Porter as a shooter in particular. We'll talk about that. But mostly what I really want to have him on the show for is talk about the Utah Jazz. What's going on? What's going on in Utah right now? Very strange. Very strange. So I'm excited to kind of get his perspective on that. And, you know, he's plugged into that organization. So we'll kind of get the lowdown on that. And then we'll answer a couple mailbag questions at the end that were left over from the other day. We'll get into that. Maybe talk about side piece teams a little bit if we have some time. First, I want to stop with our top story today.
Whoa.
Kale, pull up the tweet from none other than our own DNVR Nuggets via Harrison Wind.
Windchimes.
Harrison Wind, a wind chime yesterday, says, source, Jeff Green organized a voluntary Nuggets minicamp in Miami this week that was attended by Davon Reed, Zeke Nagy, and rookies Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, and Jack White. Others wanted to attend but had scheduling conflicts. And then Wind had a follow-up tweet I thought was great. He says, I'll have more on this minicamp soon. I love that.
Classic.
Just classic Wind. That's our guy. Just classic Wind. But think of it as the unofficial start of Denver's preseason. Nuggets players who live outside of Denver during the summer will begin to filter back to town next week for workouts. Now, training camp, I don't know if it has been announced yet publicly, so I'm not sure if I can say it. It'll be end of September, though. It'll be end of September. So there's like an official, you know, everybody gets back. Jokic, of course, is going to be playing basketball into mid to late September. He'll probably get a little mini vacation in, you know, or a little time with the family, whatever that is. His vacation is probably just going back to Sombor. And then he'll be over here. I'm guessing he'll be one of the last people to arrive. That's just my hunch. But usually in the month leading up to training camp, there's little pockets of mini workouts where guys will get together. And this is the first one of those, and I think it's cool. Davon Reed, Zeke Nagy, second and third year players, but really this is make or break years for them.
Right.
Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, Jack White, and then I love this. Jeff Green assembled it. What do you make of this?
Well, first of all, Mr. Green picking up some unexpected Mr. Nugget points.
Can you believe it?
In the offseason.
Wow. Is it too late for him to make a push for Mr. Nugget?
Oh, no way. No way.
He recruited DeAndre Jordan. Okay, that's a negative one here.
That's
he recruited Bruce Brown.
Okay, plus 25.
And then he put together a mini camp for the rookies.
That's got to be 50 points. You love it. Love that the young guys showed up. There was a point in the season last year where Jeff Green kind of switched from feeling his way out to really being a Denver guy and I think standing with his guys through the media and really ingratiating himself with the fan base. I don't know, man. Maybe a dark horse contender. He's certainly not at the top of the list, but you pick up points for this kind of move. That's all I'm saying.
He's not almost certainly not going to be Mr. Nugget, but it is a great Mr. Nugget-esque move.
It's a move.
Davon Reed was there. Maybe he helped assemble this. We don't know. He maybe has more Mr. Nugget points built up. We'll find out. I just think it's cool, though, and it's great that you got the rookies together. It's great that you're starting this process now, and I just think it's a cool thing to see from Jeff Green. It's funny. When Jeff arrived here, there's players you think of as long-term. Like, we all think Bones Highland. Years here in Denver. Jeff Green, you're kind of like, all right, he's on that two-year deal, so like one for sure, and then maybe he gets traded.
Right.
Or maybe he plays a second year, and then he's gone. Like, you never think of him long-term. Jeff Green has been a rolling stone. He's gathered no moss. He's been to different teams every single year. It would be kind of interesting if he ended up settling in Denver. If he's just you know what? I love it here, man. This is chill.
That's a really good point. And I think, look, you got to remember one of the reasons he cited for essentially choosing someplace other than Brooklyn was the chaos factor, just like not wanting to be around a circus,
right?
Essentially. And in Denver, he sort of gets both in a real star, a real contender, and no one's really looking or paying attention or talking about you every day. I imagine that suits Jeff just fine.
I imagine it suits him pretty well as well. Jeff Green, like another guy, I hope we get to know a little bit more of his personality this season because I feel like we didn't get to know it. Like you hear sometimes from teammates and stuff, love Jeff Green. You're kind of like, really?
Yeah.
It's interesting. I want to hear a little bit more about that. And I expect more and more of those. Bones Highland, absent at it. He's on a world tour, but I imagine we'll start to see him more and more around the team, and that should be great. Our other story today here, and I actually have some thoughts on this. There's two things I kind of want to bring up here. Number one, Carmelo Anthony's been doing this for 10 years, and we talk about it every time it happens. I don't remember what the name of the podcast that he was on the other day. It was one of the high profile podcasts. And he comes out and he says, you know, contrary to what everyone believes, I never wanted to leave Denver. I never told people that, but I wanted to leave Denver. But it's just, like, they put my back against the wall.
It just happened on its own.
It just happened on its own. Well, and then he goes and he's told this story before. He's given this perspective before. And I think there's something to it. Like, he tells the story of the team after, you know, 2009 happens. And they come up short. 2010 happens, disaster, you know, disaster season because of the cancers with George and Nene, and it doesn't happen. The next year, you're starting to get into this, like, hey, this team, maybe we need to rebuild. You got some players that are a little bit more long in the tooth. Maybe our window has passed and it's time to retool. And according to Carmelo, his perspective on this was the team was telling him that, and he's like, I'm not here for a rebuild. I'm in my prime. I want to go now. We'll get into some of the validity of this. I mean, the number one thing is just, like, he went to a team that was worse than the Nuggets, so that's where he loses the credibility. Is like, oh, if you really just wanted to contend, why did you join Landry Fields, you know, in New York? He could have waited 1 year and joined Wilson Chandler and Danilo Gallinari and had a good team at his back, but no, he wanted out. So I don't, on its value, I don't buy it. But here's the thing. When I first saw this, one, we've seen it enough times, I had a mixture of being, like, rolling my eyes, which I think was like 70% of me, where I'm just kind of like, oh God, Melo's telling the story again. And then a little bit of laughing, like a weird mix of like, oh my God, like, you know, kind of just laughing about it. But then I realized, and I think people watching this maybe are saying the same thing. I was like, I don't actually care. I don't actually care anymore. Like, I don't even care about the truth of the story. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It could be that he has some perspective here that it is important. I no longer care. And it's so far, and we're so far removed from it that emotionally, I feel nothing towards Melo in that way. Like, I don't feel any negative feelings about him.
Maybe if there was some more groundwork laid over the years of maintaining his personal connection to the fan base in the city. After being, I don't know, but this does sort of feel like now it's like, look, he's towards the end of his career. He gets asked often where his jersey is going to be retired. Now Denver's really important to him again. And it just sort of feels like, look, if you're, I think most fans are feeling the way you do, which is that they're over it. I got here after Melo. Means nothing to me, but I do think people, it's been so long, and there's been multiple iterations of the Nuggets and the Knicks since, and I just think at a certain point, you make decisions in this life, and there are consequences.
And this is my point was more like, even just, you know, we boo. If you think about the last few times he's been booed and it's been high profile, well, one was in the playoffs. Like, come on, give us a break. It's booed a playoff game against the division rival. And then against the Lakers, the most hated team in all of Denver. So he's been on two teams where you would boo him even if his name wasn't Carmelo Anthony, just a guy. Like, you're going to boo the opponent. And then the fact that you have this history. But the question is, if, like, Melo does sign this year with the Orlando Magic, I don't even know if he'll be booed. It'll just be like, I don't think anybody cares. Like in that way. But at the same time, there is this place where you ask me, like, all-time favorite Nuggets, I think Melo's still there. But, like, guys that, like, I have an emotional connection to, I don't. And that is what I think Melo is getting at. And that's why he keeps telling the story. In my opinion, I'm psychoanalyzing him. He's feeling somewhat estranged from Denver, where now that his career has played out, he feels at least an equal amount of connection to. Like, he feels I'm a Knick and I'm a Nugget. Sure. But I don't have the home there. And that's the cost. That's what you were getting at is, this player empowerment era that's coming full circle, and KD's at the front of it now as he's demanding yet another trade, is that the more distance you get from it, the more you don't have a home. And I wonder if KD is ever going to go back to the Bay to thunderous applause, or how frequently. And if 10 years from now, he's going to be like, I won two titles in the Bay, but I can't really go there.
Right.
I'm not, like, heralded when I show up at the game and everyone's like, oh, our favorite guy. They're kind of like, oh, that Steph sidekick that we tolerated for a while.
Yeah, they don't really claim him. And even LeBron has pushed this to its limits with Cleveland.
No doubt about it.
I don't think he can ever really sever that connection because of what he did both since. But I think a lot of people outside of Akron might think twice about how they feel about him now.
There's no question that it's just different, that it's kind of a little bit less of a, like,
in terms of saying that's ours, that's,
I'll
our
take
guy,
a bullet for you kind of guy.
Yeah, right. Whereas, look, if Jokic does this whole career in Denver, even if he never wins, people are going to feel that way.
It hits a little bit different. And this is my point, is that when we talk about player empowerment and moving teams, we've talked about the immediate reaction from the Cavaliers fans to LeBron, the immediate this or that. And then there was a healing period. Then he came back and this or that. But I think the one thing we're seeing now that we are 12 years effectively into this thing, we're starting to see that there's actually this 12-year cycle to this too, that's kind of like a player gets to retirement and is looking back on their life, a la the movie Wild Strawberries, one of the great greats of cinema, Ingmar Bergman, a fantastic, absolute classic, where he's going back to his old stomping grounds, and yet there's not this moment of like exaltation.
Right.
And I'll bring up another person here, and it's a friend of the show, former co-host of mine, and George Carl. George Carl took to Twitter, as he's been known to do, and said something about, you know, Jamal Murray not in the same category. A fair take to have. He was being compared, I think, because we did the show, and then like Swipa put out a graphic about, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, this or that. Like, you know, formed a little bit of a conversation. And George Carl, you know, goes in and says, no, he's not on any of those guys' level. Like, he's actually below Booker and Shai and Mitchell and all of the other guys that were listed, even John Morant, that were listed. He's below all of those guys. And then somebody said, like, he's done more in the playoffs than anybody else. And George says, like, only real basketball knowers know that the bubble is not real. The bubble does not count. Now, I want to just clap back on this on one way. The Nuggets were within 30 seconds of being in the conference finals the year before the bubble in a regular environment. Like, this idea that the Nuggets have never done anything except for in the bubble, again, what is it? Not true. They went to game 7 of the conference finals and came up short at the age of, what, 22 and 24. I think Murray 22, Jokic 24, Michael Porter not even in the equation at this point, and they go all the way to the conference finals to game 7 and are tied with like 2 minutes to go, within one possession with 30 seconds to go. So there's that. On top of that, like, this idea of the bubble not being real, I just push back on. Competition is competition. I know George well enough. I know that he knows competition. It was the same for the Clippers as it was for the Nuggets. Right. It was the same for the Jazz as it was for the Nuggets. Was it different? Absolutely. But to discount it, in my opinion, is just such a grossly unfair thing. And I don't know how earnest George is being in these comments. I do think that George thinks the bubble is like an abnormality, and there's reason to think that. But to discount the Nuggets and say they actually haven't proven anything, and Jamal Murray hasn't proven anything in his career because his best games came here, to me, that's disingenuous, and it brings me to another thing. Melo and George both, in my opinion, are estranged from the Nuggets. The Nuggets famously have not honored George Karl since he left, even though he's making the Hall of Fame. You know, they did the tweet, right? But he hasn't been on stage and this or that. And there's some reasons for this. You know, there were, he replaced Michael Malone in Sacramento. He replaced Michael Malone. That was a thing that happened. Uncomfortable scenario, you know, there between those guys. And I remember at the time, some people felt like, you know, was George lobbying for a job that was not vacant at the time or this or that, and maybe some uncomfortableness. And that adds to the situation here. Of course, him and Josh Kroenke split on, you know, he was coach of the year, but yet still isn't retained. It was like there was a fracture there. This is the thing I'm getting at, is that there's something larger sometime at play between Carmelo, George, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, and all of these things. And that is the real connection to the city, not just the organization and the inner politics and the inner workings of this or that, but also the fabric of what you're really connected and tethered to is the people that share this experience with you. And right now, what I think Melo is seeing is that the decisions he made, as right for him as they may have been or to his family or whatever, he's in the right to do it. But there was a real cost that wasn't because of a bitter city, wasn't because of this or that. It's just the nature of, if you ever say, I don't want to be part of this experience again or with all of these people, inevitably that severs that connection. And with George, maybe there is a little bit of bitterness from the organization to him. I think that's definitely true. And maybe from him to the organization. I think that's definitely true. And when you're coming out, it's not just about having a take about, hey, well, the bubble, this or that, but just the active sort of criticism of, hey, like, I'm trying to constantly put this down. There's a clear severance there that I think we're starting to see. And this is what's interesting about Damian Lillard. Mm. He made a conscious decision, you know, I'm going to stay. I'm not going to demand a trade, which he really easily could do, and he could probably end up on a contender. And I honestly believe this about Damian Lillard. He is connected to himself to the city of Portland in a way that very few athletes allow themselves to connect to, because they want to have this. Like, players, they're going to root for you whether you have. Jokic never talks to anybody in Denver. Like, and we love and we worship this guy, and I think Jokic is going to stay. But Dame has ingrained himself so that if he were to leave Portland, he doesn't feel like he's leaving, you know, Neil Olshey or, you know, Paul Allen. He doesn't feel like he's leaving those people. He doesn't even necessarily feel like he's leaving his teammates. He would feel he was leaving the city.
right.
for which he has connected himself to. And I think that's what Melo is now realizing is, why are you not brought back? It's not because the organization. It's because you're no longer connected to the city. And George perhaps feeling the exact same thing.
It's great stuff, man. We did that playoff series in Portland. It was palpable, the Dame connection. I mean, his face is everywhere. You can feel the love. It's in the air. So there's something to that.
Let's take a break on the other side. We're going to have Tony Jones from The Athletic joining us. I see he just called in, so we'll get to him talking Utah Jazz, Michael Porter, maybe some other things, Western Conference on the next segment.
Quiet or not, Harden Sambor or not, we love our big fella. And Nuggets fans, your home for Denver sports coverage, that's us, is partnering with a leader in sports merchandise and collectibles. That's FOCO. And FOCO wants you to celebrate the Nuggets back-to-back MVP with this newly released Nikola Jokic MVP bobblehead. Or find your fandom with FOCO's other officially licensed Nuggets gear. Check out their gear and merch for other Denver sports teams, including the new Rocky City Connect bobbleheads and much more. Head on over to FOCO.com or click the link in the YouTube description for all non-sale pre-sale items. Excuse me, for all non-presale items, use the promo code DNVR for 10% off. DraftKings Sportsbook is America's top-rated sportsbook, and they want you to get in on the hottest sports action for your shot at cold, hard cash. Blah, 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 blah. Bet on your favorite sports all summer long and gear up for football season. Right now, new customers can get risk-free up to $1,000. Just make your first bet up to $1,000, and if it doesn't hit, you'll get another shot at a big win. Plus, returning users, there's so many ways to play and win. Same game parlays, spreads, money lines, over-unders, and props. It's endless. It's safe, secure, and reliable. It's DraftKings. Download it now. Use promo code DNVR. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit. Risk-free bet paid out in the form of non-withdrawable free bet token. Max $1,000. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. I got to make a DraftKings pick of the week, Adam.
And did you pick it out beforehand?
I did.
What do you got?
Right now, you can bet on futures in the NBA, including regular season wins. And the Denver Nuggets line, Adam, is 49.5. Now, the juice on the over is only minus 140. You're not going to make a fortune here. But here's what you are going to do. Win this bet. The Denver Nuggets are going over. Feel free to take that bet with me. I placed it last night. I'm going to mimic placing it right now for dramatic effect.
Bam. 49.5. As long as Jokic is healthy for 75 games, I feel pretty good about that. I think the Nuggets have hit the over on 7 of the last 8 years.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's a pretty safe bet. All right. Our next guest is covering the Utah Jazz over for The Athletic. That is when he is not busy getting buckets on the hardwood and stirring up all of Nuggets Nation with his hot takes. It is Tony Jones. Tony, thanks for taking some time with me today.
You're going to tell the audience how you stood me up at Summer League?
Man, I wanted to play, man. I always like to play. I just couldn't make it happen that specific time. But we have to get it going.
You were the missing. Listen, we won every game, but you were still the missing piece.
You were
still the missing piece.
We would have won just by that much more. Tony always stacks his team. He was trying to stack it with me on the squad this time. So we would have definitely
it's a real super team.
That would have been the real Jamal Jokic. The real Jamal Jokic.
I definitely want to push back on that a little bit. Just the fact that whatever team I'm on, is going to win the game. So,
man, I love this, Tony. This is the energy I need, man.
My guy Ben Dowsett. He told me I stacked my team. He was very upset. He was on a team that didn't pass the ball.
You could probably tell him the exact opposite. Say Ben, whatever team you're on, the other one's going to feel stacked, man. talk a little trash.
Absolutely.
So I want to get in. First, I want to talk about Utah. We'll talk about Denver here in a little bit. Utah's been one of the most interesting teams this summer. Did you know this was coming? I assume, you know, there were some rumblings of, hey, we're probably hitting something of a reset button. Number one, do you feel that that's what this is, that they are looking to rebuild and reset a new era? And two, is this a thing that you kind of saw coming for the last weeks, months, year maybe before it happened?
If this makes sense, I was both surprised and I both knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
I was one of the first, if not the first, to report that Rudy Gobert was
right
on the block. But I was a bit taken aback by, you know, the Donovan Mitchell turn, with the organization, just because, you know, my sources have indicated that, you know, the Jazz just simply weren't interested in trading Mitchell. And, you know, and right now, to be clear, their interest in trading Mitchell is we have a price.
Right.
The price is significant. If somebody meets that price, we'll trade Donovan. If somebody does not meet that price, we're content. We're fine with going into the season with Mitchell. They don't feel like they have to trade Mitchell.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was both for me. This was a difficult year to cover the Jazz. The team imploded. The locker room kind of imploded. And, you know, we saw the fruits of all that labor once the season ended. The Jazz offered Quinn Snyder an extension that would have made him one of the best paid, highest paid coaches in the league. And he was like, nah, I'm good. And then they traded Rudy. And, you know, so it remains to be seen whether this is a reset or a full-on rebuild. If they trade Donovan, I expect them to move swiftly to try to make their roster aggressively young. But if they don't trade Donovan, I can see them, you know, trying to be as competitive as possible and banking on the assets that they have through the Rudy Gobert trade to try to reset that way.
Tony, do you have any sense of how Donovan feels about the current situation and the possibility of being traded or maybe a rebuild on the horizon?
You know, if Mitchell were traded to New York and Miami, he would not shed a tear.
Hmm. Yeah.
But if he were back in Utah, you know, my feeling is he tried to. Here's the thing with Donovan, and this is one of the things, you know, Adam, you know that we're supposed to be really objective when we cover the athletes sure. that we cover. But, you know, when you get to know these guys, you know, you root for some of the characteristics that they have, depending on, you know, right. how good of a guy they are or how not good a guy they are. So one of the things that I love about covering Donovan Mitchell, like I absolutely love about covering Donovan Mitchell, is how self-aware he is.
Mm.
If he goes out and he shoots three for, you know, whatever in the fourth quarter and they lose the game by one, he's gonna go in front of us and he's gonna say, I have to be better. And so the point of that being is, if you ask Donovan Mitchell about last year, the number one thing that he will say to you is, I was not good enough, I have to be better. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why he's not asking out, because he knows he wasn't good enough in that last year. And I think that if he were with the Jazz, I think that he would do everything in his power to make sure that he had a great season.
So one of the questions I have for you as you're talking, that's interesting and I want to circle back to it too, but one of the, when you were talking there, you talked about it imploded this year. Do you feel like the team was maybe late in identifying that that was a possibility, that that was on the horizon, or sometimes you just got to let it play out and it's like, all right, it's time to move on now?
I don't think anybody on the team or in the front office or connected with the Jazz would realize at the time how big a loss George Niang was.
Mm, I love this.
He was the one of the two or three straws that stirred the drink in the locker room. He was such a chill guy that he was a connector.
Yep.
He was a guy that was just always positive. He was perpetually positive. And I'm going to tell you, this guy's going to play until he's 36 years old just because he's a great locker room guy.
Yep.
And, you know, he was one of those guys that, you know, he just kind of connected every personality in the locker room. And when the Jazz allowed him to walk in free agency last summer, they underestimated significantly the impact that he would have on that locker room. And it showed itself all through the season.
What I love about that take, number one, I'm just such a big believer in how all the pieces matter for championship teams, including, you know, not just the role players and what they do on the court, but those types of things. The personality of a team matters behind the scenes. And I think guys like us that follow a team, you really pick up on that. You don't pick up on it one day, but you pick up on it over the course of the year of like, hey, this guy keeps things even keel. This guy makes sure everyone's focused or whatever it is. and losing that can be big. And it's one thing with the Nuggets this year. There's a lot of turnover, and it's really the first time in the Jokic era that there's been a lot of turnover, and that's one of my big questions I have for them is, did they lose the George Niang, the guy that you thought, well, you can replace his minutes, you can replace this, but you actually don't replace the connection he has to every corner of it, and that's a thing I think we're going to learn about the Nuggets here. Real quickly, last one on the Utah Jazz, though. If I look at this roster, Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, Bogdanovich, Jared Vanderbilt, Walker Kessler, maybe that's your starting lineup. I don't think that's like a playoff top 16. Like the West is just so loaded, but it's also not a basement dweller. And that's where this version of the team confuses me a little bit, and why I kind of expect the Donovan Mitchell move, just because you were saying it's a retool, not a rebuild or whatever. This almost feels like a rebuild. You're forced into it because you're not going to be a top 8 team.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that. And this is why, because you're getting massive salary cap relief at the end of this year if you keep your veterans. The Jazz project to be 36, anywhere between 36 and 40 million under the cap.
Okay.
Next year, at this point next year, okay. If they keep all of the veterans. And secondly, you have 3 first round picks in next year's draft.
Okay.
So that is real flexibility, and it allows you to go and say, okay, let's emulate Portland and let's make a Jeremy Grant trade, a Jeremy Grant type of trade for a significant guy. Then you take your first round picks.
Right.
And what is going to be, you know, one of the best drafts that we've seen in a long time. A draft that I think that, you know, you can get difference makers all through the first round. You know, people who push back on that will say that those picks project to be in the 20s. And my pushback on that will be that this draft is deep enough that you can have picks in the 20s and it'll just be fine.
But it might be, just to interrupt here, if you kind of look at this as a one-year dip. So they might not make the playoffs this year or what have you, but it does set them up to have an immediate rebound next season or maybe even at the deadline if they're in the hunt?
Well, potentially. I mean, you know, like you said, like when you have salary cap flexibility, you can move the pieces all over the chessboard.
Right, right.
And then, you know, when you have, you know, multiple first-round picks, let alone 3 first-round picks, you could do the same thing. You can move the pieces all over the chessboard. You know, The thing now, the one valid pushback to what I'm telling you is that, you know, so this hinges on, you know, your star buying into, you know, said quote-unquote retail. So, you know, if Donovan Mitchell comes to you and says, yo, I'm leaving anyway, which everybody expects, you know, the Jazz still have 2 years, you know, their flexibility diminishes by this time next year because they have flexibility this year because there are 3 years remaining on Mitchell's contract.
Gotcha.
So you're not under any urgency to move him. But this time next year, you know, that flexibility decreases by a year. You're now 2 years left on the contract. And if Mitchell has no plans on coming back, then all of a sudden the value of which you could come back. Because right now, I think the Jazz can get anywhere between, the Jazz are trying to get 100 cents on the dollar.
Right, right.
But if you know, if we go into 2 years, then all of a sudden you're getting 60 to 75 cents on the dollar. And then if it's an expiring, then you're getting 50 cents on the dollar. So if that, so, you know, I mean, the Jazz have flexibility right now, but there's got to be some urgency and the flexibility that they do have.
So yesterday or 2 days ago, you know, I saw you were pretty skeptical about Michael Porter's shooting, about whether or not he was elite. Here's what's funny. Twitter is the toughest space for these types of conversations because I realized very quickly, I think we both look at Michael Porter the same way. We just call it something different because your pushback on it was he hasn't proven it under pressure. He hasn't proven it in the playoffs and at the highest stages, which I think is accurate. He's had some good playoff moments and hit some big shots. Like I know he has like kind of a game and series winner in game 6, but again, he wasn't it wasn't the same level and the frequency that you're talking about when comparing to a Clay. So, okay. But I was surprised if you think, and I don't think you were getting at this, but I think if you just look at the two seasons that he has had, 42%, 45% on volume, that's where I'm coming from of like, you're right that he hasn't proven it as a clutch and at the highest levels and this or that. But if you just put him in an empty gym and have him shoot from different spots on the court, I honestly believe he is one of the best in all of the NBA at doing that specific thing. So however we label it, I don't know. Would you agree at least with that? Or do you even push back on that idea? If you just had mid-range, turnarounds on the left side, 15-footer, spot-up, Dirk shot, three, from all these different zones, to me, he is in a pretty rare company in terms of his ability to do that on an empty gym.
So shout out to Nuggets fans because I love you.
They didn't shout you back. Sorry.
They got mad at you. Yeah.
Specifically, shout out to my homegirl, Ava, because that's my homegirl.
Yeah, she's the best.
Friend of the show.
She made these things here on the set.
I absolutely love her. So shout out to her. So to answer your question, here's what I would say. I think elite is a word that gets thrown around way too much. And I think it should be a lot more exclusive a word. And you know, as a shooter, and let me address, you know, the percentages. So if you just look at the percentages, then yeah, you know, Michael Porter Jr. is elite. But, you know, this era of basketball, this era of the NBA, you see guys do great things in the regular season all the time. You know, Bradley Beal averaged 29 points a game. Would you consider him elite, an elite scorer? Probably not.
Right.
Because I don't consider him on the same level as LeBron James or Kevin Durant when it comes to scoring the basketball.
Right, right.
So, you know, would I consider Michael Porter Jr. an elite shooter? No, because I don't consider him, because, you know, Kevin Durant and Damian Lillard and Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson, you know, those guys have done it at this level, this high level for so long. So I consider Michael Porter Jr. a really good shooter. I think he's a terrific talent. It's funny because, you know, the elite skill that he has, that I don't think anybody can argue that people really overlook is the way he rebounds the ball. He is absolutely one of the best rebounding small forwards that we have in the game today.
Agreed there.
You know, and I'm a Knicks fan. I cried the night when I was in the draft room, the Jazz draft room, screaming at the big screen while my colleagues were looking at me like I was crazy because the Knicks drafted Kevin Knox over Michael Porter Jr.
Right, right.
So I'm clearly a fan of his game. I don't know if he's ever going to be durable. I think that there are times where he gets too selfish. I think that there are times where he doesn't. I think that there are a lot of times where he doesn't defend. But I also think that as an offensive talent, he is a terrific all-around offensive talent, and he's very worthy of the vitriol that Nuggets fans defended him with when they were in my space the other night. So, you know, when I analyze somebody, you know, I analyze the good and the bad. And if you're not LeBron James, Nikola Jokic, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, Luka Doncic, you know, you're probably going to have some holes in your game.
Right.
Not to say the shooting is a hole in Michael Porter Jr.'s game. It absolutely isn't. I'm just saying that I'm not putting Michael Porter Jr. with, you know, the elite shooters of the game just yet, just because he hasn't proven it at that level. So, you know, it's Twitter is probably the wrong place to have that kind of conversation because nuance is 100% lost.
Right.
And so is context.
Right.
But at the same time, I am stuck in a hotel in Baltimore, Maryland, and I did have.
You had time. I like it. It's funny, man. I still think we're saying the same things. Like shooting.
We are.
Like Klay Thompson, for example, part of what makes him a great shooter is he reads the court so well. He knows how to get open shots without, you know, just to get to the spots he's supposed to be. Read the court, cut here, spread out here, flare here, screen here. It's going to get me open here. And obviously Michael Porter has very little of that relative. But again, I just his jumper, I've seen him too many times, both in games and even relative to other great shooters, when he just goes through a workout and it's 30 in a row, 25 in a row, turn around, no matter what angle he's at or where he's at on the court. I just think that shot doesn't even touch the net. Unlike I only see with guys like Klay Thompson and Steph Curry and very, very few others, you know, just observing what they look like in empty gyms. But nonetheless, it doesn't empty gym doesn't really matter at things. Let me ask you this last one before you get out. Where are you at with the Nuggets' chances this year? Where do they factor into when you look at the Western Conference? How many teams definitively above them, and do they have a shot at coming out of the West in your opinion?
So for the Western Conference, I think that there is a chance that a team wins 50 games and is in the play-in. I think this Western Conference this year is going to be absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
When you look at Golden State, you look at Denver, you look at the Clippers, you look at the Mavericks, you look at the Phoenix Suns.
Right.
You know, we haven't mentioned Minnesota yet. We haven't mentioned New Orleans yet. I mean, there's going to be a really good team somewhere that is going to be in a real undesirable playoff spot. So that being said, I really like the Nuggets. I think they're going to be one of the best offensive teams in basketball. You know, that's assuming MPJ and Jamal Murray are blessed with health and durability. I really like the addition of Bruce Brown. I think Bruce is going to really help. That's the wing defender that this team has been missing for a long time. You know, another year of Aaron Gordon. I think a lot's going to depend on, you know, if Bones Highland is ready to be at or near the top of a scouting report, because last year he wasn't. And I think that there's a big jump this year, and I think a lot's going to and backup point guard is going to tell a lot as well. Because, you know, losing Monte Morris is going to hurt, because, you know, he guaranteed you when, you know, Jamal Murray is healthy that you have 48 minutes of really, really, really good point guard on the floor.
Right.
You know, that being said, I mean, you know, I think the Nuggets are somewhere in between 3 and 6. I think they're going to have to prove that they can stay healthy. I think they're going to have to prove that they can defend as 5 when it really matters. But, you know, their offensive upside is as high as any teams in the league. And obviously, you know, Nikola Jokic is entering his prime. So, you know, we're looking at, you know, a potentially all-time career there. So, you know, I'm high on the Nuggets in the regular season. I think they're going to win a lot of games. Their playoff viability is going to be determined with how well they can start defending when it really matters.
And 1-2 in the West, is it Golden State, the Clippers in your mind? Is that who you kind of see as the favorites?
Yeah, I probably see them 1-2 in the West. I think Phoenix is still going to win a lot of games.
Yeah.
You know, who am I spacing on? So I got Golden State, Phoenix. I'm spacing on
Memphis, maybe?
Memphis, yes. Yeah, I'm spacing on Memphis. Memphis is going to be, you know, I think Memphis is going to be good. Now, Memphis is interesting because I think they're going to struggle a little bit out of the gates because they're not going to have Jaren Jackson.
So I agree.
They're not going to have quite the and they're not going to sneak up on anybody like they did last year.
Right.
So – you know, I hope Ja gets his gritty out because, you know, he a hunter last year to being a hunted.
That's so true. That's so true.
different space to be in. So it's going to be really interesting. But this Western Conference is really, really good. I think it's going to be an interesting NBA because I think when's the last time that I think simultaneously the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference were both really good conferences. I think this year is going to be the first year in a while that we say that.
I strong agree, and it's a trend with all the NBA, and one of the weird things is going to be to see which teams sort of jump ship earliest for Victor W, because I do think there's going to be a few teams that look around and think, can we push for the six or do we drop for a top four? First teams to blink might have an advantage there, and he might be worth it. I don't know. We'll find out. Tony, though, I appreciate you taking some time, man. This was really, really good. I appreciate it. Anything you want to promote on your way out?
Nah, man, just keep following my Twitter for interesting and engaging conversation.
There you go. You're a Bones fan, it sounds like. I heard it in your voice. Are you a big Bones fan?
I'm a big Bones fan of his scoring and how aggressive he is.
Yeah.
I really want to see him mature a little bit. And I really want to see him start doing some of the other things that don't involve scoring. But
right. In
terms of being an on-ball offensive creator, he's off to a really, really good start in this league.
He is Tony Jones of The Athletic. Thank you so much, man. Have a great one.
Appreciate you.
Thanks, bro. I appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
You bet. All right. Let's take a break. On the other side, though, we'll get to a couple more mailbag questions and tie a bow on today's episode.
If you know about rugby, then you probably know. And if you don't know, then you should know that Glendale, Colorado is Rugby Town USA. It's a thriving culture. It's a beautiful stadium. And they house the American Raptors, a rugby club composed of crossover athletes. They were already tested in other sports and successful in other sports, and now they wanted to put themselves to a new challenge, and that's rugby. They went 5-5 in their first season. Not bad for some athletes that are new to the game. They want you to come out and check them out in this upcoming season. And what's the best part about hitting up an American Raptors game? They are free. Head over to AmericanRaptors.com and grab your ticket for the upcoming season. If you can't make a game, AmericanRaptors.com will also be streaming them on their website. And if you fall in love, if you're already in love with the sport of rugby, you got to check out the DNVR Rugby Podcast, weekly pod hosted by the homie Colton Strickler. He lays it out for the layman's. He gets into the weeds for the lifers. He's really good at his job. So check out the DNVR Rugby Podcast.
Is that it?
That's it.
All right.
Oh, wait, no. I completely skipped the second read.
It didn't sound like
it. Yeah, it's all right. Sorry, it's my first time doing the show. I literally use my Athletic Greens every morning, had them this morning, and I hit up Caitlin and I said, look, we're going on a trip and I'm just going to need you to make sure I have as many travel packs as I need. It's my favorite way to start the day. 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food, source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. One scoop, 12 ounces of cold water, and I feel like I've started my day the right way. It's all uphill, downhill from there. Don't know what it would be in this context. Just check out Athletic Greens by going to athleticgreens.com/nuggets. That's athleticgreens.com/nuggets to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance today.
So third segment here, third and final segment. Don't forget, we are in Serbia. 1 week from today, we're going to be on a plane for like the 12th consecutive hour. Can't wait for that.
Let's go, baby.
We also have the shirt, Kale. You can see the shirt there in the bottom here. Oh, actually, it's not there. There it is. Boom. Right there. Beautiful shirt that goes. Proceeds go to supporting this trip. I'm going to give you guys, we're going to talk more and more about this, but quick rundown. We arrive. We've got a tour. My guy, Goran, who runs a tour or has a tour company out there. He does professional guided tours. We're taking a tour of Belgrade. We're going to be at Beer Fest. We're going to have a meetup with people on Saturday. More details to come. So if you're in Belgrade or can get to Belgrade Saturday, next Saturday, a week from this Saturday, we're going to be out there. We hope you come. Talk nuggets with us. You can size yourself up against us. You can see how tall I am and how short some of the other people are on staff.
Just, you know, don't be surprised when I'm short. That happens a lot.
I didn't say you.
No, I'm just saying it comes up enough, and yet somehow people go, wow, you're pretty small. I'm like, yeah, I try to broadcast that.
You and me both, Brendan. I get it all the time. I'm like, you're a lot shorter than I thought.
Yeah, like I'm not walking around on my tiptoes, but.
We got some cool things. We might be going to the Red Star playoff soccer game. I don't know. That would be really incredible. On Tuesday, we're going to be at the game on Thursday. Nugget Jokic versus Giannis. Did you see Giannis, by the way, in his first game?
Yeah, I did see that.
30 points on 11 of 12 shooting in like 20. 20 minutes.
Yeah, and like 12 rebounds.
12 rebounds. It's just insane. That game should be absolutely incredible. I can't wait for it. And some other things here in between. So that's kind of our itinerary. And by the way, some big time interviews going on throughout that whole process that we'll be sharing immediately with you on some of the interviews and then doing the documentary a little bit later on. Right now, as we were doing that ad read, or maybe as while we were talking to Tony Jones, the NBA announced they are going to retire Bill Russell's number 6 league-wide. League-wide. A couple things here. I mean, that's a cool gesture. Bill Russell, an incredibly important person. One of, certainly on a short list of most important people in the history of the NBA. Like when you tell it, when you, especially if you limit it to just players, I think Michael Jordan's probably the most important. Magic Johnson, Larry Bird together, David Stern certainly there. You go back even further to some of the key pieces. Bill Russell, though, is going to be on a short list that I think is really, really close there. So it's kind of a cool gesture to the man and to the basketball player that the number 6. A couple players, though. LeBron James wears number 6.
They will be grandfathered in.
They're grandfathered in. They're grandfathered in. So you'll have a little, like, if you have it now, shouts also to Zylan Cheatham, former Nugget.
That's right.
Also grandfathered in. Zylan,
you should probably change it.
He could probably just do it. Also, shout out to Bryn Forbes.
Keep it, Bryn.
Bryn Forbes will be one of the last remaining number 6s. And then Rajon Tucker, another former Nugget. Rajon Tucker. Oh, that's right. These aren't real Nuggets, but they those guys all have it. Some of the other names, Kenyon Martin Jr., Kristaps Porzingis. What a bummer.
He should change
it. He should definitely change it. He definitely does not deserve special treatment.
I think LeBron should change it. I think it'd be a sick PR move. He's not going to do it, though, but...
Could sell even more jerseys.
That's what I'm saying.
Would he go to 23? Is 23 retired in LA? Is that the deal? I don't know.
He can't do that.
It's weird. You know what's weird is I think of Kobe as 8 and 24, and it's like he was both 50-50, first half, second half. With LeBron, I don't.
What do you think of him as?
I don't. Like I see what you're saying. I don't think of him as a number. Yeah. Like I don't think of him as 23. I don't think of him as 6.
That's a good point.
But he did, and I kind of forgot that he had done this. Mm-hmm. So, weird thing. If you wear 23, you're Michael Jordan. If you see somebody out wearing, like, just a number 23 jersey, you're Michael Jordan. That's Michael Jordan. That's if you see someone wear number 6, I think it's Dr. J.
It's Kristaps Porzingis.
That's Rajon Tucker, man. Are you kidding me? All right, what else do we have here? Some more mailbag questions from the other days. Steven asked me, in light of the recent KD news, I have a haters ball question. No Eric here today, but we could still do the haters ball. What has been the most satisfying collapse or failure of another team?
This list cracks me.
Examples, you know, of course. So I made my own personal list, and I'm not going to lie. I think the most fun, like not the best feeling I've had, but the most fun I've had with a collapse came last year with the Phoenix Suns. Their collapse when we actually invented the haters ball.
Yeah.
When we just invented it after watching it was one of my favorite, you know, favorite things we've ever done. And it was fun because of how smug and cocky they were. It was fun because in the lead up to it, was it Stephen A that said, not Luka, Devin Booker will be the best player in game 7 on the court? And it was like laughably wrong.
It was fun because the whole league celebrated
it's
the haters.
It's so true.
Ball.
It's so rare that no one
said, hey, leave Phoenix alone. Not one person.
I had no idea they were hated that as much as we hate them. So they're like a more recent one. The Lakers 2022. This last year was pretty – watching LeBron sit out games down the stretch was kind of like – it actually was so satisfying as in it was like – does nobody – like everybody just kind of saw like, oh my God, this team doesn't even want it. Like right. It's so rare that you see a super team literally quit.
Right.
And that's what we saw in that one. Lakers 2021, the year before that, was also pretty delicious. The only thing about them was – the injuries, like they might have beat the Phoenix Suns, man. They might have. They were in the, what was it, 2-1 or something when everybody goes down. Like they were kind of in it, and then they get hurt. That's the only thing that takes it away. But the fact that they had to do it the ugly route going through the play-in, wasn't it a double play-in? Weren't they like the 9 seed or something? That was pretty great. Lakers, 2011 was pretty great. Lakers. This was the Andrew Bynum takes out, was it J.J. Barea? Like, this was, they were so pathetic the way they went out. Or was it, actually, no, that was 2011. What was the year? No, it was 2012 or 13 with Dwight Howard, the This Is Gonna Be Fun Lakers. That team was also another, like, great failure.
Yep.
Lakers 2004, I just keep going. Here's the thing about the Lakers. When you actually go through their history, they should have won more. This is what's so annoying. I'm dead serious. They had a season with prime Kobe, prime Shaq. They had Gary Payton and Karl Malone. They had all those guys and they lost still.
They're actually, a losing franchise.
They're actually a losing franchise that just has the deck stacked for them. They should have actually lost more, so there's a lot of Lakers. 2004 was a good one. The Nets, obviously, last year's Nets were...
one of my favorites.
One of my favorites as well. Getting swept.
I hope it's the poster event for the turning of the tide to the new era of the NBA. If we're right about some of the way these young stars want to do it.
The thing about the Nets is that it's been a drawn out collapse, and now I have to sit here and listen to these KD reports, yeah, and he wants true. To go. By the way, he wants to go to the 76ers.
Oh yeah, that'll make him likable.
The lamest. I mean, of course he does. He wants to go back with James Harden.
And Joel Embiid. You know what?
What are we doing here? KD
do
might.
Do it. Is I don't
KD,
need, whatever.
I've gone back and forth on KD so many times, but I think I'm firmly against KD at this point. I don't know if there's any salvage for me. He might be funny online again. The Rockets in 2018 when they couldn't hit any threes. When their math didn't check out.
And I should have been rooting for them, but I was rooting against them.
It's so true. Like, the Warriors are so lucky that they went up against unlikable teams along the way. Like,
so true.
If the KD era Warriors were going up, obviously, against the Nuggets and against some of these other like more lovable teams, it might have been insufferable. The Heat in 2011, I hated it at the time. Because, like, there were teams that I disliked, not Dallas necessarily, but like the Celtics and like some of these other teams out east that I hated more. So I was more pro. But in hindsight, I'm glad that they all got humbled in the way that they did. I'm glad that played out exactly
good,
the way it played.
Good for Hoop. And like the Dirk moment is awesome and very easily could be some, it won't, but some version of the way we rooted for Jokic. Like, right. It's easy to graft it on. So.
So those were some of the ones that I've enjoyed. Are there any other ones that you've enjoyed that it's like, wow, that didn't work out?
Oh, you hit them. Every year the Celtics don't win the title is up there for me.
I liked, a part of me does enjoy, like, Nurkic was so embraced by Portland the
way
one year.
That kind of,
and then the way that it's kind of just fizzled out until like now people are trying to you saw Danny Marengo a couple months back was like trying to trade him for Ayton and Nurkic found it.
Yeah.
it was like a total like, yeah, even they don't love you, Nurk, get on board here. So those are some of mine. Daniel Snyder or Sider asks, or Sitter maybe, what would have to happen for Jack White to jump Zeke in the rotation? Now, I like this question. Because first of all, Jack White would have to jump, I think, more than just Zeke Nagy to get into the rotation. But what it's really asking here is, what is the doomsday scenario for Zeke? I almost don't think it's possible because I just think Zeke is too playable. Useful. But there is a scenario where he's not making shots and maybe he's out of position on top of there or this or that. But if he's not making shots, his value goes down a ton. And if he's not making shots for an extended period of time, it's a disaster scenario because Zeke has value to the Nuggets as a player and as a trade asset. And if he ruins both of those and he's just a guy that like nobody wants and you can't play and so bad that Jack White has leapfrogged him, then I think it's actually a sneaky, darkest timeline scenario for the Nuggets.
Agreed, but I'm with you in that I would say it probably would have to be injury. I just don't foresee that for
me
Zeke.
Me neither.
He's playable. Here's the bottom line with Zeke. On the NBA floor, it's been pretty good.
I know, it's so true. Jack White, by the way, what would it take? Like, is there a scenario where Jack White is just a better fit or player? I don't think so. Jack White did a lot of like hustly things in Summer League, and I thought he was very good at those things. I don't know that he's a guy that you invest. Like, Jack White to me is a guy that you're going to, it's like almost like Davon Reed. You're maybe even a more reliable Davon Reed. You're cramping my space, dude. I don't know what to tell
your
you.
Your space
dude.
Is bigger
my
than
my space is
most
big, but you're taking
space.
Up a lot of space for a guy. You know, 60-40 here is how it should be. Jack White, I don't know that, like, is he going to dominate the G League and get his chance? I don't think so. Torrey Craig dominated the G League and did not get his chance that first year. Right. I can't picture a scenario where Jack White is shooting like 50% on 10 threes a game. And they're like, we got to bring this guy up because we know he can defend and rebound and hustle. But now he's a can't miss shooter. So we have to play him. I just don't see that scenario. So the only scenario is a Zeke disaster scenario. And I don't see that happening. Knock on wood. Last one. Oh, that was the last one.
Wait, what's yours? What's your long flight? So do you sleep on planes?
Dude, look at me. I can't. Like, I mean, I have a hard time. I have a really hard time. So one of the tough things about our trip is it leaves, you know, we're leaving super early in the morning and we arrive super early in the morning. So we have a 24-hour period where the best thing we could do is F up our sleep schedule so that we're on Serbia time as quickly, acclimated as quickly as possible. To do that, I have to sleep. I hope I'm sitting next to you or Kale for the 60-40 rule. Yeah, the 60-40 rule. Yeah, you guys all hope you're not. If I'm sitting next to a stranger, my strategy is to like, I'm going to try to take an Ambien and pass out so bad that I drool all over everyone and don't care.
Do you want to watch Con Air together, though?
Dude, I'd watch Con Air.
Let's do it. I'll download it.
I love Con Air unironically. Yeah, I love it ironically, too.
Yeah. Hard to say which one I like it more, but
I can't tell. Oh, flight. All right, everybody, that does it for today. Thanks so much for tuning in. Friday shows tomorrow should be a great one. And then we have some guests lined up for next week that are going to be very exciting in the lead up to our trip to Serbia. I cannot wait. Don't forget, we have a tailgate tomorrow for the Broncos game. Is it a preseason game that doesn't matter? Yes. Is it an excuse for us all to get together and play some bags? Absolutely. And eat some sliders. So check that out, the DMVR tailgate. Hope to see you out there. See you guys.